Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We are off and running, and a brand new broadcast week begins on the horn. It is the 17th day of April 2017, 4-17-17. I don't know what that means numerologically, or if it means anything, or if there's anything to numerology. Probably not, except for like addition and subtraction and stuff. But anyway, it is. It's the 17th day of April 2017. We are over the halfway point, and this is the Morin Monday. I think we're going to have some fun this evening. I mean, we will. What's the old saying? Laughing past the graveyard. The condemned ate heartily. All of that sort of thing. Yes. If you would like to be part of the rollicking madcap, merry, zany multimedia real-time extravaganza that takes place during this program's live hours from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. New South Wales, then run on over to headonradionetwork.com and pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you'll be immediately amongst the merry. You'll be greeted by Jug of Punch, Steve from Georgia Stan, Stock and Larry, VT Blom. Oh, God. Are we going to do this again? All capably moderated by longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who has folded space, being a third stage guild navigator, to become Man Cave. Yes. Anybody want to let me know if the program's getting out? Because I always see these messages at the beginning of the program. No audio, no audio, no audio, no audio. And pity sakes. Okay, yeah, I'm sending, I'm recording, I'm listening, doing all the things that the little streaming thing wants to do. Okay, so it's not rolling on TuneIn, or it's not rolling at White Rose, but it is rolling at TuneIn. And, of course, there's always the standalone player at headonradionetwork.com, which it runs the high, yes. Okay, so good. That's just weird. Jack telling me, tune in okay. White Rose, nope. I wish I knew why that was, because it's the same stream. Okay, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Affirmative on tune in. Thank you, Sylvia, as well. Yeah, in radio stations, see, you've got these little things called confirmation monitors, and they, you know, they're just pick up the air, but since we're not doing terrestrial radio, it's not. Yeah, it's not like that. But we're on, and that's cool. Of course, I would be remiss if I did not note that this is a listener-supported program. We try to raise $200 every evening, whether we need it or not. Hint: we always need it. This is one of the cheapest radio programs on the air. Not in terms of content and quality, but in terms of cost. For somebody who decides to kick in $10 a month, it works out to about 6.5 cents per hour of programming that you're actually expending to keep it all on the air. And if you would like to help, please. I mean, you know, I don't know how many people fast forward past this who listen to the podcast, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, whatever. But go to headonradionetwork.com. Click on the Contribute tab. Fill out the incredibly simple little fields. If you would like to become a monthly subscriber, and God, we'd love it if you did, just set it and forget it for $10. Or Mr. Soros! You know, I think I'm going to raise the Mr. Soros number to $20,000. No. You know what? Let's raise the Mr. Soros number to Air America levels. Let's raise that to like $60,000. And I'll bet you we can keep something going longer than Air America did. Mr. Soros, yes, just put the number in and walk away. Well, after you've hit the submit button, please. And I've got big thanks to put out. You know, we closed the program with a $225 fundraising hole on Friday from last week. And this is the importance of our subscribers. They, along with Catherine in Arizona, knocked that all out. Beat it. Destroyed it. And shortly thereafter, or shortly before that, Mark jumped in. So that means that we have actually got only, it was 200 minus, we've got $175 to raise this evening. Thanks to Mark and Catherine. Many, many tremendous thanks for that, because it makes things a little bit simpler. So there we have it. That's where we are as we begin this broadcast week. Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Catherine, and thank you to all of our subscribers for the 17th, 16th, and 15th of the month. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. So it is. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Yeah, the low-quality stream is working on TuneIn via VLC, Hoghead tells me. Thank you, Hoghead. Someday we'll sort all this out. You know, Mr. Soros, if you would do something like that, I could reach out to Ben Burch and we could give him incentive to not have to slave away for corporate America. And he could spend all of his time, you know, making sure that things like the server doesn't get internet weather and the streams stream and the packets pass and all of that stuff, Mr. Soros. Yes? So that's where we are. But anyway, we need to knock down $175 by any combination. But since there's a five involved, the ciphering's going to make my head hurt, so I'll just leave it at that. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. Yes, Moran Monday. Let's get right to it, shall we?
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. The carnival has come to town again. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Just mere steps off the carnival midway. You can find your things to thrill you, things to shock you, things to amaze you, to nauseate you. Every human emotion is behind the thin cybernetic veil that is the Moran Monday tent. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, mothers and fathers, kitties and cousins, neighbors, they're all here for you. The birthers, the deathers, the ninthers, the tenthers, the baggers, the bircher eater, the birchers, the booger eaters, the trumpanzees fill the space behind their plexiglass cases here in the Moran Monday tent. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this here's the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. No siree, no siree. What you got to do is be mighty careful, because when you enter the Moran Monday tent, you want to keep a close hand on wallets, purses, small children, pets, even that iguana you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, European messenger bags, because the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yes, you will. Yes, you will. I'm going to start with something. Look, the research department here at the Horn is open-sourced. I try to verify what I can. Sometimes I can't. And this is one of those I can'ts. But because we are all prone to seeking out confirmation of our biases, I'm inclined to believe this because, well, it fits with my preconceived notions about the nature of Republicans, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, tea baggers, trumpanzees. What we're talking about here is Senator Jeff Flake, appropriately named. Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona stand. Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona stand has, among other things, defended Geezer Disgustus in virtually every instance. Mm-hmm. And he, among other things, got himself in a bit of hot water, getting booed over Trump's tax returns, because, of course, naturally, since Donald Trump is a Republican, there's nothing to see there. On the other hand, of course, if the question was one of Hillary's tax... Hillary, Jesus Christ, the devil incarnate, good God, Goldman Sachs speeches, son of a bitch! Oh, the most evil human being ever to walk the face of the earth! Who, by the way, released 38 fucking years of tax returns, but never mind that. Well, Jeff Flake would be interested. But Jeff Flake is not interested in Donald Trump's tax returns, because what interest could the American people possibly have in Donald Trump's tax returns?
Now, as a fiscal conservative, what is your position on all the weekend trips that the president makes down to Mar-a-Lago? Secondly, what is your position on Senate Bill 26 that would require the president and all future presidents to release their tax returns so we know where they stand?
pretty raucous crowd of Arizonans there. All waving green cards, meaning they agree with the statement being made by the speaker. Yeah. So we got two questions. What about the money that we are flushing down the toilet, sending? And by the way, it's not just Trump. It's Trump and Melanoma. It's not enough that Melanoma won't share her bed with Donald Trump, you know, and move down to the White House and everything. It's the fact that Melanoma won't, she has to fly down in a separate fucking airplane. That, of course, you, me, I, we, the people, trying to form that more perfect union, and certainly seems like the union of Melanoma and Comrade Kumquat is a little less than more perfect. It's less perfect, let's just put it that way. We're on the hook for that. And the Secret Service detail. And. So let's see where Jeff Flake was on that.
With regard to presidents and what they do on the weekend, I'm not going to criticize presidents.
See, they didn't let him finish. I'm not going to criticize presidents who are Republicans. Because I'm sure that in his past, Jeff Flake fulminated to no small amount about all the damn time that Negro in our White House spends out there playing golf when he shouldn't even be allowed to play golf. Damn it! All right. Trump is on track to spend more on travel in his first year in office than Barack Obama did in 8.
I refrained. I refrain from criticizing President Obama.
Liar.
And I'll refrain from criticizing President Trump. With regard to tax returns, I think it's good policy, and virtually every presidential candidate has released their tax returns.
Including Richard Nixon.
Does that mean you will vote yes for Senate Bill 26?
No. I think that that ought to be handled in the election. If you feel that somebody isn't being transparent, you don't vote for them.
Then why not pass a bill that all nominees release their tax returns when they declare? Why not pass a bill that all nominees release their tax returns when they declare their candidacy then, so we know where their loyalties stand? Being on the Foreign Relations Committee, you need that for the investigation for Russia, unless you step up and ask for an independent
Russia,
investigation.
Shaw.
We need serious investigation into the Russia issue with elections. But I believe that that can be handled by the Senate Intelligence Committee and the House Intelligence Committee.
You get the idea. Jeff Flake did not have a good evening. Because, see, he's going to toe the line because, among other things, he's scared to death of Mitch McConnell. Two totally different leadership styles. Harry Reid let the Democratic caucus just sort of butterflies, you know, just do what butterflies do and flutter by. And Mitch McConnell is much more the authoritarian, being a Republican, and he expects lockstep marching. Okay? So that's all just kind of a setup. By the way, are we supposed to be talking about the North Korea thing? I didn't get the memo this morning, but it's more in Monday. So here's the part I'm not sure about. this is where the Horn's open source research department comes in. Because I got another quote from Jeff Flake. And this is the source of the real Moran Monday nomination. Get the hockey puck, please. And the duct tape. I realize it's tough with the hair that it pulls out and everything, but damn. You're going to want it. I promise. If this is real, if this is true, if this is true, I'd give it about 80-20 odds of being true. Okay, everybody got the hockey puck? I just want to make sure that there's plenty of time, because I don't want anybody getting hurt. This is an alleged quote from Jeff Flake, and when you hear it, you're going to go, "Okay, I understand why Bob thought it was true. It seems too crazy to be true, but it probably is." We can't. My brain won't hardly let me say the words out loud. I feel like my IQ's going down every time I look down and read this thing to myself silently. We can't rely on solar power. Now remember, this is the senator, the junior senator from Arizonistan, where there's not just a shitload of cloud cover, and there's a ton of sunlight. Oodles and oodles. And meanwhile, battery and storage technology is going great guns, leaps and bounds. It seems like there's another jump in capacity every week. Whatever else you think of Elon Musk, and considering the way he treats his workers at his automotive plants, I don't think much of him. But I will give him credit for the degree of innovation that he is pursuing. Battery technology is increasing by leaps and bounds. Storage capacity. Solar is the future, okay? It just is. I read a story over the weekend about how, Exxon's discovered 2 billion barrels of oil off the coast of Guyana. Poor little Guyana thought Jim Jones was the worst thing that ever happened to it. Wait till all that Exxon starts washing up on your beaches. Yeah, who needed Guyana anyway? Who needs a habitable planet? Who needs a climate that'll support human life? Jeff Flake doesn't. I think it's pretty clear that he's reptilian at this point. All right. Okay, Larry tells me you're giving me IQ anxiety reading the quote, Bob. Damn. All right, we're going to get through this. We can do this together. It's going to hurt. It's a little like going to the dentist. But we'll be okay. This is not to say that if you don't have, that if you do have a bottle of like rot gut tequila with a swirly straw in it, you might want to get that right close at hand. Or maybe a bottle of old panther piss, or it just the really nasty stuff. You know, some Popov Cossack vodka, Guzzler's gin. we can't rely on solar power because we can't tell people they will not have lights during the night. There, I read it. Now you know what I've been going through for the last couple of days since I saw that quote. Let me say it again in case you think you heard it wrong. We can't rely on solar power because we can't tell people they will not have lights during the night. Because solar power doesn't work once the sun goes down.
Mother. This guy gets to vote in the United States Senate. People who apparently agree with him send him there.
You know, there are little moments that I've talked about over the course of the 10-plus years we've been engaged in this conversation. And I talk about them in terms of little signposts on the road to ruin. A couple come to mind right off the bat, top of my head. One was the fire department in Tennessee that showed up and watched a man's house burn down because he had missed a payment on his fire service bill. That was a signpost. It was years ago. There was another. Nebraska, maybe Wyoming, possibly Montana. That didn't have the budget money anymore because tax cuts, because fiscal conservatism. Didn't have the money to keep their roads paved anymore, so they started grinding up roads back into gravel. Signposts. This is one. We can't rely on solar power because we can't tell people they will not have lights during the night. I don't know whether to cry or scream. Or simply start bellowing every obscenity that enters my mind. And remember, no, I'm not going to vote for Senate Bill 26. No, I don't want to see Donald Trump's taxes. I don't want to see how deep in hock he is to the Russians. Morons. Yeah, Larry wrote me a little bit ago. He said, that clip you play on Moran Monday with the lady saying these are people of the land. Well, even though she says people of the land, I feel like she's talking about ignorant white Midwestern and Southerners and not at all about indigenous people of the land. Well, okay, let me clear this up, because if one person thinks something, there's good chance that several hundred others do too. That's not a lady. That's Gene Wilder. It's a clip from Blazing Saddles. And I trimmed it a little bit. What he actually says is, these are people of the land, the common clay of the new West. You know, morons. So I trimmed out common clay of the new West. But that's Gene Wilder. And he's not talking about, he never was talking about indigenous people. He was talking about the nasty-ass, dumb-ass, ignorant, racist, white residents of Rock Ridge in that particular film. So, just to clear that up, my God, how are we going to get past this? if you can't... I'm rendered speechless. I just am. Because, you see, with somebody like Jeff Flake, you could array entire phalanges of, or for those of you, phalanxes, of scientists, engineers, physicists, electricians, even religious authorities. And have them explain it to him in their hundreds, thousands. And it wouldn't change him. Because his opinion is born of politics, not anything resembling that primal human urge to learn more, to know more. Jeff Flake knows as much as he needs to know to satisfy the people who give him lots of free money. And that is all that damned well matters. And if you proceed from that premise, the place you wind up in relative to the well-being of our country is not a good place. It is most assuredly, it does not partake of anything you and I would recognize as a happy ending. If there were 99 intelligent people in the Senate and Jeff Flake was the only one walking around picking his teeth with his toenail clippings, it would be one thing. But the Senate of the United States is comprised of and controlled by a group more than half of whom well, let's just put it this way. The Republican majority in the Senate agrees with Jeff Flake. And Jeff Flake and others like him are, as Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, might describe it, why we can't have nice things. Because, Lord God, we can't have nice things. So that's enough time with Jeff Flake. We've got lots more stupid. Oodles, oh stupid. And where to go? Well, in case you're, maybe Jeff Flake's an outlier. Here, let's check in with Haley's senator. She's going to hate me for describing it. Tom Cotton. And his take on Donald Trump's taxes.
The president, The president said during the campaign that he would not release the tax returns while he was under audit. Now he says the election has happened and he doesn't need to release his tax returns. I'm wondering if you'll take the initiative, have him release those returns so that we can see what kinds of connections he has with different countries around the world and what... What tax proposals would personally benefit him and his family?
Well, I would. As far as I'm aware, the president says he's still under audit. And he said he's going to release them when they're done. But he's also. The president. This was a side issue in the campaign. This is a central issue in the campaign. Hillary Clinton and her campaign repeatedly criticized President Trump for this. And he won despite all of it.
You got that? Y'all need to shut up because Hillary Clinton. Got it. You know, I remember what seems like eons ago when Democrats didn't make any bones about how shocked and disgusted they were by the news of the consensual sex act in which Bill Clinton engaged. They were all over the TV. My senator, Robert Byrd, stood up in all of his stentorian greatness and, during the trial in the Senate and talked about just exactly how skeevy and disgusting he thought what Bill Clinton had done with another adult in a consensual situation was. But none of that is allowed to happen in the lockstep Republican Party. Oh, no. No, hell no. They will defend him to the bitter end. Which brings me to... To another story, which I consider, well, I don't want to offer this as an actual official Moran Monday nomination, because I know the guy, I like the guy, he's a respected academic, and so I don't just want to say Moran, but. Can we downgrade this to just mistaken or misguided? When every Republican you hear from says, well, I don't care about Donald Trump's taxes, goddamn. When you hear that, one would hope it's a sign. And so we come to Professor Alan Lightman of American University in D.C. Now, he achieved, he was already a well-respected academic professor. But last fall, he predicted that Donald Trump would, in fact, win the election. And there inside the Beltway bubble, everyone went gaga. It couldn't possibly be true. Well, it was. For those of us of a certain age, do you remember while she was alive how about every 3 weeks the National Enquirer, whose cover you would see as you were going through the checkout line, would feature the photograph of a woman named Jean Dixon. She was born in 1904. She lived to be 93 years old. And she held herself out as a psychic and an astrologer. And back, you know, back 70s, 80s, every few weeks there would be a National Enquirer cover with Jean Dixon's photograph on it with her predictions for fill in the blank. The Weekly World News couldn't afford Jean Dixon, so they just invented an alien that they made photographs of shaking hands with Bill Clinton and George Bush. And Ronald Reagan. And the other... Right. She made her bones predicting that John F. Kennedy would win the presidency in 1960. She made this prediction in 1956. She also said that he would go on to be assassinated or die in office, though not necessarily in his first term. This is called hedging your bets when you're a psychic. So, I mention that because of the phenomenon that has attached itself to Alan Lightman. He predicted that Trump would win the presidency, just like I did. I think I came to that conclusion a little bit before Alan did. Hell, I think I came to it before, you know, Michael Moore did. But who's counting? And that's why I make a big joke out of my frayed purple robe with the tattered appliqued moons and stars and the glow-in-the-dark paint that says, "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby?" when the lights are out. Because it's... It ain't magic. It ain't psychic. But now this thing has happened to Alan Lightman, and Alan Lightman has a new book coming out, and I may get him on the program just to talk about it a little bit. It's been hustled into print. It's called The Case for Impeachment. Politico got an advance copy. By the way, after he predicted Trump's win, and after Trump did win, you know, the Electoral College, "I did something that very few Republican presidents have been able to do." He really tweeted this. "I won the Electoral College." Don, fucking dumbass. No one gets to be president without winning the Electoral College. Shh. Just not saying, just say it. And so after he predicted Trump's win and after Trump won, Trump sent him a note. "Taking time out of preparing to become the world's most powerful leader, No, that's a quote from Alan Lightman. He wrote me a personal note saying, "Professor, congrats, good call." So now Alan Lightman is predicting that Donald Trump will be impeached. And this seems to be getting some legs because another person, and I saw this kind of blow up all over Twitter last night. Woman by the name of Louise Mensch, and I'd never heard of her before. She is described as a conspiracy blogger. Is also predicting the imminent downfall of the Donald Trump presidency. A lot of folks out there getting busy predicting. But you know where I come down on this, right? And I think until there is sufficient empirical data to support otherwise, I'm going to stand by my own prediction. Ain't no Republican Congress gonna impeach Donald Trump. Because they're getting every... Okay, so they didn't get the health care thing. That's their fault. That's their fault. That's the Republican Congress's fault. That's Paul Ryan's fault. If they had just put a simple one-sentence bill up that said the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act be and is hereby repealed, that thing would have gone through the House of Representatives like shit through a goose. A very irregular goose at that. I mean, quick. But they didn't. But let's see. They've passed legislation using the Congressional Review Act to make it possible for individual states to defund Planned Parenthood. They've used the Congressional Review Act to allow coal companies to dump poison in streams in Appalachia. They're busy. And they have no motivation whatsoever to impeach the goose that lays the orange eggs. Speaking of which, I wonder if at the Easter egg roll, I wonder if there are any orange eggs. Yeah, Spicer was in his bunny costume again. I don't even want to think about what's going on. Obviously, that's something he's into. And I do not want to think about what's going on in that bunny costume. No, sir. No, sir. I wouldn't get near that bunny costume until it had been martinized 3 or 4 times, sanitized, perhaps fumigated. Arrgh. He nasty. So, Alan Lightman, in his book, goes through the history of the idea of impeachment and then starts laying out how or why Trump might be impeached. He tells, in the book, he tells Trump to, quote, curb the Mussolini Act. He tells him to fire racist Bannon. He closes the book saying, Justice will be realized in today's America not through revolution, but by the Constitution's peaceful remedy of impeachment, but only if the people demand it. And this is where I kind of get lost. Because for the very life of me, I can't figure out I can't trace the roadmap to get there. I can't get on board with the assumptions that you have to make about Republican members of the House of Representatives in order for impeachment to happen. Now, granted, we have talked about some outside possibilities. You know, the ones where I said that if I were Nancy Pelosi, I'd be sending roses to the Freedom Caucus every fucking day. But that won't necessarily get the job done. Because you still have to have committee heads who are willing to hold hearings and entertain bills and somebody somewhere in the Republican Party would have to cheerlead it. And then getting over that hump. And I'm going over this again because I keep looking at my Twitter feed, and it's pretty extensive. And I keep seeing all these people who absolutely do not understand how the impeachment mechanism in the Constitution works. They seem to think that if the House impeaches, you know, bring on Bob Dylan and play It's All Over Baby Blue and walk off the stage. There's still a Senate. It's like the people I see. We are so going to romp all over the Republicans in the midterms of 2018. We are going to whip their asses, Mom. And when you read that, you know that you're reading something from somebody who hasn't even bothered to look at what the Senate races are next year. At those 9 incredibly safe Republican Senate seats versus the 25 Democratic seats, any number of which could be up for grabs. We're so gonna whip them. But down the pipe. So I don't know. Is it just? Wishful thinking? Self-delusion? I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a downer. But according to Alan Lightman, Trump can avoid impeachment by supporting the Paris Climate Accord, something which, if he did that, goddamn Trumpanzees would maybe scream for impeachment. using a fact checker. He doesn't need a fact checker. He's Trump. And by treating women with respect.
Yeah.
Among other things in his book, he also tells Trump to add a shrink to the White House positions. I don't know what it's going to take. I mean, treat women with respect. This story's a little bit older, but I've kind of hung on to it because sometimes they just fit naturally into the flow of things. A woman was in an Apple store back in March when she ran into Sean Spicer. So she started asking him questions. The woman's name, by the way, is Shree, and she is dark-complected. And Sean Spicer started out by saying, "Well, it's such a great country that allows you to be here." Well, the woman was born here in the United States. She's an American citizen. But Sean Spicer assumed that she was here at the sufferance of the American people. Fun, huh? By the way, for anybody wanting to go over and grab a different stream, Jack tells me in Shreveport, White Rose is working now. Don't know when it started working. But he said I tried it successfully at about 5 minutes before the hour. Thank you, Jack. So, yeah, he's going to treat it. That stuff flows downhill. And then, of course, and we haven't discussed it, probably should, there was the Trumpansy attack during the Tax Day protests in Berkeley. Hoo-wee. It wasn't a riot. It was a straight-up assault. Trumpansies cannot stand the idea that anyone would question their beloved dictator. Emphasis on the first syllable. So all that and more. Oh, yes, Jesus Christ, we've got more morons. Lots and lots of morons. Definitely lots of morons. And if you would like to participate, bring your own nominee to the table, feel free. The numbers, well, the stress line, named for the inimitable Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, who in some ways I'm kind of glad he checked out when he did so he didn't have to put up with all of the... He would be freaked right out. But in other ways, I miss him dearly for what he could bring to the table in these conversations. Well, the stress line is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. The other line is 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. And then finally, from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you want to get on the conversation and you've never sent me a contact request, please do so and include a note that says, "Hi, Bob, Horn listener, whatever, something that lets me know that you're not a Nigerian princess. Okay? Going back to the National Enquirer and Gene Dixon, Larry says, my Republican grandmother read and believed in those magazines religiously. The Globe, the News, the Star, the Enquirer especially, but 80% of the others. I grew up seeing them all over the coffee table when visiting my grandparents in the 80s. Good times, brother, LOL. He continues, yeah, it's scary how little people know about the Constitution. Hell, Bob, give me a percentage on how many registered voters, much less Americans, could tell you how many senators there are in the Senate, much less how many representatives in the House. I'd be willing to bet you it's less than 10% of Americans could tell you how many were in both. My fear is it's even lower. Well, you're not going to go broke betting that way, Larry. That's a fact. James, with a note, stupid Spice. Yeah, but his taxes pay for her food stamps. Got to be careful with that channeling, James. Sometimes it'll stick. All right, break time. Hey, thanks very kindly. Thanks very kindly to Jeremy for turning our fundraising goal into $170 so that I can do the ciphering a little easier. That's one at 170, two at 85. Four at 4250, etc. Or 17 at $10, or 10 people at $17. Thank you. That does make life considerably simpler. Alrighty then. Break time. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'll be back. Light up the phones if you want. This is the road. Well, you know, if we're gonna go to hell, might not be so bad as long as there are kick-ass guitar solos involved. Chris Rea and The Road to Hell. 6 minutes past the hour on this Moran Monday on the Horn. If you call the program, and I'm not bitching or anything. Well, we had a call, and I think I know who it was. But for some reason or another, the Bluetooth wasn't connected. I connected it, and I lost the call. If you want to try again, go right ahead. And just remember, sometimes it's, you know, in medias res, so if it's possible, I'll go right to the phones. If it's not, I'll finish the thought and then go to the phones. Okay. This is going to be fun. It's been sort of all over the place lately. Last couple of days. Tim from L.A. pointed it out to me. Generally speaking, we always have a lot of fun with clips from Alex Jones here on the program. He sounds like he's the love child of Michael Savage and Selma Diamond. Truly a voice made for print. Crazier than a shithouse rat, as they might say down in Texas. I bet they say that in Texas, crazier than a shithouse rat. Texan horn contingent. Do y'all say crazier than a shithouse rat down there? Just check it. Well, I didn't realize it, because I don't spend a lot of time focusing on the life and the many loves of Alex Jones. But he is locked in a custody battle in a divorce. It appears that the Illuminati have done got to his ex-wife, Kelly. And the custody battle is being heard in the circuit court of, Travis County? Texas? And it is a straight up mess. Because Alex Jones is being confronted by his ex-wife over whether or not the person he portrays, and this is going to be central to the inquiry, whether he's portraying a character when he gets behind the microphone and in front of the camera. In front of the microphone? You know, we've never really sorted that out. But whether that's really who he is when the lights go on and the broadcast starts. You know, the things like, the vile and filthy things that he said about old Hillary Clinton, anybody he disagrees with, degree to which he is adored by neo-Nazis, Klansmen. Right. So, that's what's going down in this divorce. The divorce is final. The custody is what's being fought over now. And the former Mrs. Jones, tool of the Illuminati, of course, well, she says that there's only one Alex Jones. And that Alex Jones is the Alex Jones who people hear every day. And that that there is no differentiation. That when he's sitting around in the living room, he's it's obviously, what's that? What, my coffee's cold. The Illuminati got the coffee maker. Okay? Among other things, recently referring to Adam Schiff of California, a Democrat. And who knows, I may get a Sparkle Pony email saying, Adam Schiff, oh my God, oh dear Jesus, an establishment politician, holy crap, he's an apologist for Hillary Clinton. Well, Alex Jones went a little further and referred to, and this is kind of at the heart of things. Let's just let Alex speak for himself, shall we?
No, it's unbelievable. What we're hearing from the Democrats, both in the House and Senate, is red baiting.
That's on drugs.
Fear-mongering.
Wait. Okay, just so you know, this is a conversation with Roger Stone. Yes, that Roger Stone. A rat fucker from all the way back in the Nixon era. Yeah. So the first voice
no,
you
it's
hear
unbelievable.
Is
what we're hearing
Roger Stone.
From the Democrats, both in the House and Senate, is red baiting.
That's on drugs.
Fear-mongering.
Genre.
You know, it is well beyond the point of recklessness, whether it is Adam Schiff who has maligned me or whether it is Senator Mark Warner or whether it is Senator John McCain. But let me tell you something, Alex. These guys are pussies. They talk a tough game. We're gonna get Roger Stone in front of the committee. Gentlemen, ladies, I am ready. I am more than ready.
It's like, let me say this right now. Let me tell, I'm not against gay people. Okay, I love them. They're great folks.
Time out. If the gay members of the Horn community would care to offer a little backup on this, I'm more than happy to have it. If I'm wrong, tell me. If I'm right, tell me. If a guy starts a sentence or a declaration of any sort with, I'm not against gay people, okay, I love them, they're great folks, you know the next thing is going to be the word but. This is the equivalent of, some of my best friends are black, but those people in the Black Lives Matter movement, blah, 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 blah. I ain't got nothing against gays, but I don't know why they got to hold hands in public. That sort of thing. So, with that as prologue, let's go back to the audio.
Let me tell, I'm not against gay people. Okay, I love them, they're great folks. But Schiff looks like the archetypal cocksucker with those little deer in the headlight eyes and all his stuff, and there's something about this fairy hopping around, bossing everybody around, trying to intimidate people like me and you. I want to tell Congressman Schiff and all the rest of them, hey, listen, asshole, quit saying Roger and I, and I never used cussing in 22 years, but the gloves are off. Listen, you son of a bitch, what the fuck's your problem? You want to sit here and say that I'm a goddamn fucking Russian? You get in my face with that, I'll beat your goddamn ass, you son of a bitch. You piece of shit. You fucking goddamn fucker. Listen, fuckhead. You have fucking crossed the line. Get that through your goddamn fucking head. Stop pushing your shit. You're the people that have fucked this country over and gang raped the shit out of it and lost an election. So stop shooting your mouth off claiming I'm the enemy. You got that, you goddamn son of a bitch? Fill your hand. I'm sorry, but I'm done. You start calling me a foreign agent, those are fucking fighting words. Excuse me.
I love the excuse me at the end. That's what really makes it for me. That and the desperate attempt to be some sort of red-faced John Wayne. Fill your hands, you son of a bitch. Fill your hands, you son of a bitch. Oh, you know, it's from True Grit. And there are so many other great lines from that movie to use. Lawyer Daggett, Lawyer Daggett. She pulls that Lawyer Daggett like a gun. That's a good line. Every scene that Strother Martin is in, but suddenly we're into a digression about movie criticism.
Yeah.
So, Alex Jones apparently wants to fight Adam Schiff? And Mrs. Jones's lawyer, the former Mrs. Jones, wants to play that in front of the jury or the court or whatever. And by the way, fill your hands means, that means raise a gun, a firearm, just in case anybody's wondering. Arnold with a note. If you can't throw the fucking F word correctly, don't do it at all. For a stupid fuck, can't even use profanity with any kind of eloquence. Oh no, hell no. We have people on this program who work in profanity the way that Michelangelo worked in stone. Or the way that, Rembrandt worked in oils. It's beautiful to behold. So, that means that with the former Mrs. Jones alleging that the on-air Alex Jones is the same as the off-air Alex Jones, well, it created a problem for the pettifogging mouthpiece that Alex Jones hired to defend him. There was, of course, Pizzagate, which he loudly championed until he claimed that, well, yeah, okay, I guess the Pizzagate thing was wrong. I was misled. Yeah. So here's the fun part. Randall Wilhite is the aforementioned pettifogging lawyer defending Alex Jones. Randall Wilhite, in arguing his point to the court, said of Alex Jones and his fitness to be a parent to the children, he's playing a character. He is a performance artist. You know, like Laurie Anderson is a performance artist. Right. He's a performance artist. He's just an entertainer. He doesn't mean anything that he said. And that statement grew legs in a damn hurry. Meanwhile, Carol Baker pointing out, I'd like to come out and publicly say that I believe Alex Jones to be a foreign agent, because them's fighting words, and I'm in the mood to give him an old lady beatdown. Ooh, I think you could sell tickets, Carol. Maybe rent the boxing ring over there at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Park Country Club and Mobile Home Court, and you'd probably get a lot of takers. So now with this, he's playing a character, he's a performance artist out there banging around. Suddenly, the empire that Alex Jones has built is looking a little shaky. Leading Alex Jones to issue the following on Twitter.
Because we're all on the Screen Actors Guild. This is all fake. I love the media everywhere. It says, Jones says he's an actor. Yeah, if I dress up like the Joker and act all crazy and say crazy stuff, it's called satire. So I believe everything I'm basically saying. I believe in my message. I don't believe things literally I say as a satire. Like if I say, oh, I agree with the globalist. Humanity's evil. Blow the planet up. That's called satire. And then I literally have...
Which, by the way, is not the problem that the former Mrs. Jones is complaining about. It's all the, I want to kick that cock-sucking fairy's ass stuff that he brings home. And sitting there in his double-wide Barca lounger, bitching about the Illuminati and Hillary Clinton and Comet Ping Pong Pizzagate. That's what's bothering. No. Sure, there's satire involved. Hang on a minute. Let's finish the clip.
The government, others saying, you want to blow the planet up. I'm saying, no, I'm being sarcastic about your recklessness. But my message, I believe in the overall message of freedom, lower taxes, you know, classical liberalism, and the control right, control left on what, Paul?
The control left and the control right. See, when you use phrases like the control left and the control right, that means you're still off in conspiracy land. Yes. And so somewhere Mr. Wilhite was like, oh, God damn it, Alex. You know, you're paying me a lot of money to do this. And I need you to not make my job harder. Shut the up. Lawyers will say that to their clients. And some legal agreements, some lawyer agreements say client agrees to be cooperative with counsel in his defense or prosecution of, or right. Yeah. Gee, have you ever heard Alex Jones? Have we ever run a clip of Alex Jones complaining about people blowing the planet up? This fucker supports every well that goes in, every drill that bites into the earth. Every frack that gets fracked. He's for it. Global climate change. He's right on board with Comrade Kumquat. When Donald Trump said thousands of Muslims celebrated on 9/11, InfoWars was right on board. Donald Trump is telling the truth about Muslims celebrating in New Jersey on September 11th, 2001. It was back in 2015 when Marcus Aurelius said to him, "Your reputation is amazing. I will not let you down." There are even examples of Trump saying crazy shit the day after, I played it here, and Alex Jones going, "Hoo-wee, look at that. Look at that. I say it here, it comes out there. It's amazing, isn't it?" Larry says, "I wonder what the over-under is on Alex's daily meth expenses." Now, you want terrifying? Here's terrifying. Since the divorce went through with the previous Mrs. Jones, he's remarried, Alex has. He's got three kids with Kelly Jones, and he wants to keep them because he doesn't want to pay the child support for them. But meanwhile, there's a new Mrs. Jones. And she's expecting a little Jones any time now. Shades of Rosemary's Baby. Yeah. Ill. But then again, takes all kinds. Got to be somebody for everybody. But if you can imagine anything having sex with Alex Jones without reaching for the brain bleach, you're a better person than I. Oh, goody. Carol Baker says, looky, I done found you a sponsor for the Alex Jones segments. Get your free gold guide today. I actually caught a little bit of flush phlegm ball today. I know. I'm sorry. And there they were, the gold ads. Right on time. Hey, let's run over to the phones and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
So the fact that somebody actually married Alex Jones.
Two of them.
My thing is, bitch, didn't you? You knew what you were getting when you married him. It's not like it's a secret.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not so sure, Tracy. I mean, you know, their kids are like in their teens and stuff. Maybe she didn't know. I mean, that's back when before the show was blowing up. Because, see, when you were right...
How long has he been on the air?
He started out like 21 years ago on public access cable in Austin.
And how long has he been crazy?
Well, see, I don't know that he is. Okay?
Well, how long has he been him?
Well, okay, let's work this. If you've listened to... And this will take me a minute, so just bear with me, okay? You know, God, how long are we talking?
You
know how this works.
Math is involved. Okay.
No, there's no math. It's just there's got to be a progression. If you listened to Mike Malloy for 20 years,
okay.
Mike Malloy has been pretty much the same guy.
Right.
I've pretty much been the same guy for the dozen or so years I've been at this. Rick Smith has always been who Rick Smith is.
Tom Hartman has been who Tom Hartman is.
For good or ill, absolutely. But if you're working the hardcore right-wing side of the street, if you're working the Savage or the Alex Jones or Glenn Beckerhead nether realms... They always have to constantly, and that's a little redundant, but they always have to reinvent themselves. They always have to one-up. They always have to be one skosh crazier than the next guy because it's the only way to keep the birth or death or ninth or tenth or bagger, birch or booger eater, tea bagger, Trumpansies tuning in. They come back. Day after day after day for the crazy. I mean, hell, even Howard Stern has always been who Howard Stern is.
Right.
But you have to constantly ramp up the lunacy to be Alex Jones or Savage or any of those other Lulus. So, you know, he started off being one thing. And you know, I remember hearing him 10, 15 years ago. He started off being one thing, and then he had to keep... I mean, he's always been a paranoid. He was one notch over from Art Bell and George Norrie, okay? Just less aliens. Some aliens, just less aliens. But he's gotten progressively worse. Because he has to keep the money stream coming. And he has to keep the audience. And, you know, when little old me living in, you know, little old nowhere West Virginia pulls up at a stop sign and it's got a damn InfoWars bumper sticker on it, you know the guy's become pretty ubiquitous in the loony right.
Right. At that point, there's no saving him.
Right.
Like you were saying about... was the earlier about the slack said about the solar energy. I can't repeat it.
No, see, it's doing the same thing. You can't tell people they won't have lights at night.
At night. When you, I was driving, and I had to pull over.
Did I make you pull that car over, Tracy?
I seriously, before, I wasn't on the freeway, but I was actually on the street, so I could pull over. I had to pull over and stare at my radio, and I'm like, motherfucker, what? Seriously, wait, what? So he's one of those people that no matter, you can give them science, you can give them facts, pictures. It's the same people that, you know, you can tell them that the Bible is not a history book and it won't matter.
Not a nickel's worth.
Not a nickel's worth. It doesn't matter what you say or do. You'll get biblical on them. You could just say casting your pearls in front of as when it's flying is just not going to do any good. Just leave it alone. Because when you keep talking to people like that, it's just going to get your blood pressure up. You're going to be all flummoxed and upset, and they're just going to walk away like, you know, why are you so upset? And you're like, but the lights are still being, it doesn't matter when the sun goes down. That's what the solar energy is and the panels and this. And you're yelling and getting off screaming, and they're just looking at you like, but the sun's going down, so there's no light. And you're just, and you're like, but solar panels and this.
I'm sailing to Hawaii next month. Well, I hope you don't sail off the edge of the earth.
Right. And yeah. It doesn't matter that the earth is, that you can prove that the earth is round.
Doesn't matter if that work has already been done.
Right.
Well, it's a liberal conspiracy.
Right. And, you know, is that that we're at that point now, Bob, that, you know, just get out, we just got to save ourselves. But unfortunately, the people that are in control of our planet are going to kill the rest of us. and therein lies the problem. You know, like you were talking about the aquifer in Australia and how these companies, they're the same companies that are building pipelines here, and we're not going to get an iota of that oil. It's going to other countries. The coal that they're digging up in Australia is going to India. And what is it? How many thousands a year old is that? What's that water?
Oh, 10, 15, 20, 100,000. I mean, It's so damned old that it really, you know, doesn't matter.
It predates white people, in other words. It predates people, but especially white people.
There's probably dinosaur pee in that stuff.
There's probably dinosaur piss, yeah, in that water. Dinosaur. It's so old, dinosaur pee. Oh, my God. But, you know, we need the coal. We need the coal. And like you said earlier.
In the Australian case, it's we need the coal to sell to India.
Right. It's not even, the coal's not even staying in Australia.
Nope.
It's being sold to India.
There we go.
Keystone Pipeline. Where's that oil going, Bob?
Not here. Oh, by the way, since we're talking about, since you've raised this issue, remember our good old friends at BP?
Oh, what have they done lately?
Well, they've got an oil well problem again.
Where? Pray tell where?
North Slope of Alaska.
Oh, Gene Willikers.
They managed to make the well stop spewing crude oil all over the place since Friday. They really don't know the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservatism. They don't know just how much crude oil got spewed all over the place. Maybe the reindeer can come and lick it up. or the caribous or the mooses or something. But here's the problem. It's still spewing vented natural gas.
Oh.
Porter Ranch, anybody?
Right. So they're doing out there what it was doing out here in Porter Ranch.
Yeah, well, it's just spraying oodles of natural gas, methane, into the atmosphere that just happens to be about 86 times more heat trapping than, say, carbon dioxide.
Well, carbon dioxide.
I mean, they went over.
Who was it? Carbon dioxide doesn't do anything. This is Denmark. You know, this is the guy who's the secretary, the guy that's the head of the EPA, Pruitt. And carbon dioxide doesn't do anything. What's the problem?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, if carbon dioxide was a problem, we wouldn't put it in our soda pop. Damn Skippy. So the folks at BP, folks at BP ran right over, and they turned on the safety valve. Guess what?
It didn't work.
It didn't work.
But it broke.
Didn't work worth a damn, and it didn't even make the natural gas slow down. But BP has said, we are currently putting together a plan to plug the gas leak. Remember when they had a plan to plug the leak down there at the Deepwater Horizon well? Remember how long they didn't plug the leak down there at the Deepwater Horizon well?
Deepwater Horizon.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
They made a movie about it, though.
True.
See.
But I forgot another one. In a little geographic area named Cook Inlet.
Where's that?
Alaska.
So we're still in Alaska. Okay.
Yeah, because it's so easy to work on stuff in Alaska.
Right. It's so accessible.
And Cook Inlet is known for the fact that it's home to beluga whales. And not that Scott Pruitt over at EPA gives a flying bucket a rolling donut about beluga whales, but beluga whales are an endangered species. Well, see, there's this underwater natural gas pipeline, and it's underwater in Cook Inlet where the endangered beluga whales are, and it's been leaking natural gas for 3 months.
And nobody's done anything about it.
Well, I mean, pipelines leak.
Is that a BP thing, too, or is that another wonderful...
I'm not sure who owns that one. Meanwhile, just so that we're sure, we're clear about all this, Lisa Murkowski, who is a senator from Alaska, has said, we need to open up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to drilling. We do not have enough leaking in Alaska.
And meanwhile, we're about to go to war with North Korea.
I'm not so convinced.
No, I know. I'm just throwing that in just for the hell of it.
But it certainly does add to the overall quantum of angst.
Angst, yes.
You got you some angst, Tracy?
Well, you know what? This past weekend, I didn't do any news watching. Well, Friday, I got myself kind of wasted. Well, not too wasted. It was 3 lorazepam and a glass of wine because I had to have an MRI.
Okay, so that's not schwasted. That was medicinal.
That was medicinal. That was so I could get through it because the MRI was an hour. 30 minutes. 30 minutes on the neck and 30 minutes on the shoulder. So I go to the back there probably when to find out what was happening with my neck and my shoulder. So Jan and I went to dinner so I could. That's one of the good things about where I went for the MRI, they have evening appointments. So I'm going to have a glass of wine.
Yeah, no pushback here.
I did that. And so, and I actually, I was fine. I actually came home and did homework. And then the lair on Saturday. So between that and homework, and then Sunday, I did homework. So I was out of the loop as far as news and stuff like that. This morning, I turned on the news to see Mike Pence in Korea and, you know, and missiles being fired and misfired and all sorts of stuff. And I'm like, see, this is why, as Carol Baker says, we can't have nice things. Because people. I purposely, I immersed myself in Black culture. That's because I had to do a paper on, because I'm about, I was working on a paper about Marcus Garvey and W.E.B. Du Bois. And it's funny, W.E.B. Du Bois got into it with everybody. He got into it with Booker T. Washington. He got into it with Walter White. He got into it with Garvey. There were, I don't think there was one Black leader that W.E.B. Du Bois did not get into it with. But what I love is the fact that how his, one of the best things he got into it with was Walter, how him and Walter White got into it. But they did, it went on for 6 months in public on, in the Crisis, which was like the monthly magazine for the NAACP. And it was epic. I mean, these two men, basically what was happening, this was during the Depression, and Du Bois was pissed off because, of course, the New Deal was for white, you know, it was supposed to be for all Americans unless you were Black. And Du Bois was saying, basically, his side, he's saying, we should sell, Black folks should self-segregate. And the, with self-segregation meaning that we, with that power, we should just start selling and buying within our own communities, screw white people, and that means we would retain our own power and force integration, which pissed off the NAACP. I mean, this went back and forth. Walter White was trying to, you know, put out fires back and forth, and it didn't work. Walter White basically said that he wanted a rebuttal, and Du Bois said, basically, fuck you, I'm not doing it. This went on for 6 months until Du Bois just finally said he walked away from the NAACP. But the funny part was Marcus Garvey was laughing the whole time, because if you know anything, 20 years before, Du Bois was one of the people that helped get Marcus Garvey put in jail and deported for Marcus Garvey doing the exact same thing about self-segregation. So Garvey's sitting back laughing at the whole thing. And Du Bois and White are going back and forth because the powers that be were saying that it will never work. Black people can't segregate. You're basically saying that you're playing into the white man's hand. You're saying that Black people should stay apart from white folks. And Du Bois is like, no, that is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we have the economic power to stay within our own communities. We're not saying that we don't want white people in our communities. They can come into our communities. We're fine with that. But what we want is the same amount of economic power. We want what the black folks want, what white folks are getting. We want you to put the same amount of money into, we're paying taxes and whatnot and so forth. We want the same amount of money that you're putting into white schools, into Black neighborhoods, whatnot, so forth and so on. But of course, you know, scared Negroes, we're not going to do that. But here's the best part about it. All these fools at the NAACP saying, no, this is not going to work. But what happened, what, about 20 years later, Bob, something called the Montgomery bus strike, bus boycott? What did that, what was that? That was self-segregation. What did we do as Black folks? We said, screw this. You're not going to let us ride the buses and sit where we want. We're paying the same fare. So what did we do? We stopped riding buses. A year later, buses companies went under. They had to do what? They had to integrate. So that's my Black History moment in the moment, in the minute. But anywho.
Well, you know, I remember when Dr. Bill covered the Booker T. Washington 1895 Cotton State International Exposition speech.
Man. And Booker T. Washington, see, well, you got to look at it from books, because I wrote a thing about Booker T. Washington. And because, you know, there was an issue with Du Bois about him. You got to look at it from Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington was born a slave in the South. W.E.B. Du Bois was
born not just in the South, Tracy.
But in the Deep South.
No.
In the Deep.
Booker T. Washington, I can get in the car right now, and 45 minutes from now, I will be where Booker T. Washington was born.
Exactly.
Okay, he was born in 1856, and in 7 years' time, where he was born would be West Virginia.
Hello.
And there used to be a memorial to him there. I think they had to move it to the cultural center, because every time you turned around, somebody went and painted that word on the bust,
right.
The memorial bust of Booker T. Washington. But he had, yeah, you're right, he had the experience of being born into slavery, and he had people who could tell him what that experience was. And there's one central theme in the Atlanta speech that, if you read it in 2017 with the benefit of 100 years of history, sounds an awful lot like prophecy.
And which part is it?
It's where he says, it's where he's pleading for the New South to include Black America in its advancement.
Right.
And he says, if you do not, He says, if we progress, we will progress together. If you do not, then Black America will be forever a millstone around your neck.
Well, it's the same.
How was he wrong?
He wasn't wrong. It was the same with the Ferguson decision. The same thing. The long decision. Was saying the same thing he was saying. Was like, if you do it by doing this, by saying that Black people are less than, you are setting them up as failures. You are making it so that these people will never have freedom in this country.
Well, and economically, he was saying you set up a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
I mean, if in 1894 the White South had paid heed to what Booker T. Washington was saying, you wouldn't have a Republican Party in 2017 that could bitch about the welfare, because the only people they'd be bitching about was shiftless whites.
Yep. If you had had a Congress back during the Great Depression, or Congress, or, you know, government agents that actually gave out, you know, FARA and all the different agencies, CCC and all that, the way it was supposed to be given out, like you said, you wouldn't be talking about Black folks getting handouts, because they wanted to work, but they wouldn't give them give them the right to work. They had to do a pay-to-play thing.
Well, they had to do an oppression thing.
Right.
I get the sense that you really delved deeply into what you were working on, but you were talking about, and I don't know, I don't honestly know where you were going. But that's okay, because that's how this program goes. You were talking about the glass of wine and the MRI and then doing your homework.
Because I was doing my homework instead of watching the news. That's what happened, and I was so engrossed we're reading about how Booker T, not Booker T. Washington, but how, you know, Du Bois finally figured out that, you know, black folks and white folks, he just gave up. He finally got to that point where, you know, he just like, I just don't think white people are just going to ever get it. And he finally just gave up and went, just moved to Africa. He's like, I'm done. Which was the same thing, and you know, the whole thing with him and Garvey, because, you know, Garvey was one of those, let's just build a nation of in Africa for black, for all, you know, people of African descent, just to go back to Africa, to build their own nation there. You know, he was anti-colonization, it was just, it's just weird how they, there was just this weird parallel between all three of them, between Washington was never talking about trying to go back to Africa or anything like that. He was trying to talk about a nation within a nation or what have you. But it's these weird parallels. They were all talking about the same thing within the different times. But like I said, Du Bois just finally just said, screw it, I'm done. And King got to, you know, like we talk about how, you know, white people are so you know, so happy about, you know, the king, that, you know, this I Have a Dream king. Nobody ever wants to talk about the king that was at, you know, that was off talking about, you know.
Nobody wants to talk about the Dr. King speech a year before he was murdered that he made at the Riverside Church, where he drops a rock on capitalism.
Right.
And talks about the manifest evils of Vietnam.
Right. And talk, you know, and about and fighting about, you know, fair wages and stuff like that. Nobody wants to talk about that. And nobody wants to talk about how he got tired as well. And how he basically prophesied his murder. He knew. He knew that he was going to be killed. He knew. Just like Malcolm knew. They're just to the point where black leaders knew that either they're going to throw me in jail, where I could, they're going to silence me in some way, shape, form, or another. Either I'm going to go to jail, they're going to make me like out to be a crook, or I'm going to die. It's going to be one way or another. And in King's case, it was like, I'm going to die. But I really think Martin Luther King knew that he was going to be killed. You could tell him.
Well, like he gave every impression of that. And, you know, when you know what the FBI's done to you, and frankly, in 1963, when he saw what radical white right wingers would do to a white guy in the form of Kennedy,
yeah,
there's a little handwriting on the wall.
Yeah, if they're going to take one of their own, if they're going to kill. I mean, let's face it, he was just a Catholic, so, you know.
Well, yep, there's that too. But,
you know.
Well, okay, so I gotta move into some Easter dinner here. It wouldn't be any fun without food porn with Tracy. Anything awesome happening for Easter dinner?
You know, the only thing, Jan was feeling better, so we just did. She made a ham with a glaze of pineapple and apricot jam. And ambrosia, and baby broccoli, and baked yams, and Hawaiian bread.
Nothing, oh, is that all? Is that all she did?
Well, Alex and Jan cooked. I was immersed in my paper. I didn't even hear Alex go to the store. I didn't even hear anybody leave. The only thing I heard was dinner's ready. I never even left. I was in my office from 11 o'clock yesterday morning till dinner time.
Well, you know, I was I had a frustrating Easter.
What happened?
Me celebrating Easter is...
How's your stomach?
Terrible.
Still?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It ain't going to get any better. You know, barring a miracle, which I don't believe is going to happen, because I don't believe in miracles. And barring me getting some health insurance sometime, which is apparently right up there with the miracle. But anyway, thank you for asking. But Ferg has been working like the very Dickens. He's cooking. He's working in a kitchen. He is busting his ass. He is wore plumb out at the end of every day. But he loves his work. And that means...
What is he doing?
He's cooking.
Oh, where is he working?
He is a cook. In a kitchen.
Nice. Not, at a restaurant?
At a restaurant, yeah.
Check him out.
And he's learning, and he's going great guns, and I'm really proud of him, and they like him there. And Ferg, 21 though he is, there's still some aspects of him that's little boy. And all little boys, all grown men have some little boy still in. You know that.
Alex's birthday is the same day as you guys, as you and Agnes's wedding anniversary, May 1st.
Right.
He will be 29 years old, and he is still a little boy.
And so I didn't go out and, you know, the Easter Bunny did not come and visit Ferg. Let's put it that way.
Bob, you guys didn't go Easter egg hunting?
But I was going to make it up to him. And this is one of those moments where you like staggering, not full frazzleck, and not. So I thought I'm going to surprise him. There's not much left of the old smoker; it's about shot to hell. But there's enough left that I could have smoked a leg of lamb and done it real nice for him.
Okay. I've never had smoked lamb.
Oh. Lambecue. It's lambecue, okay? It's lambecue.
I don't, and I'm not a big fan of lamb, so it was.
Got to do it right. I'm not either. I'm not either, but I will eat lamb that I make.
See, these are these things that, and I'm getting a smoker soon, so see, yet another reason, either, see, I have to get you to California just so you can smoke me a leg of lamb, see? Mm-hmm. I'd buy a smoker just so you could do that for me.
Well, I would do it for you. I mean, I was all set to go. You know, toast the sesame seeds, lemon pepper, garlic powder, onion powder, oregano, grindy in the mortar and pestle, little oil on the leg of lamb.
Oh, you go.
Pat it down with that stuff. And then, okay, so I go to Wiggling Pig. Odds are 1,000,000 to 1. They don't have it. So, okay, Kroger's. Because Kroger's, they had lamb shanks, and you cannot do a lamb shank. I mean, maybe Bobby Flay could. I can't. You can't do a lamb shank on a busted down, wore out smoker. So that's out.
Okay. I'll have to take your word for that.
Although it galled me to do it, Walmart. No leg of lamb. No lamb. I guess the hillbillies don't eat it. I would have had to go all the way to Beckley or all the way to Charleston to maybe find a leg of lamb. So Ferg didn't get his lamb. I'll make it up to him. But yesterday, no, it was just... Well, I mean, my diet these days... I had a big bowl of, no, not a big one. I had a small bowl of Easter mashed potatoes and a cup of Easter yogurt.
Wow.
Yeah, living large.
Man, like I said, and since I didn't go to Weight Watchers this weekend because Jan wasn't feeling well. And now you see, I'm not good when people are sick. This is why I can never be a nurse. Because I'd be like, bitch, get your ass up. So when she's already super needy, but then when she gets sick, it becomes needy to the...
This is where the siphon comes in. It becomes exponential.
It becomes exponential. And I'm just not good with that. And I mean, I felt bad, but see, when you have like either a 24-hour virus or a stomach flu, there's nothing that your spouse can do other than I love you. You rub the tummy, you rub the head, and you can't really do anything other. So it got so bad, Bob, and I drugged her. Yeah, I did. I just finally got to the point where I couldn't handle it anymore, and I ground up sleeping pills and I put some in her, some applesauce. And I put her to sleep. What?
Let's not say that on the air, Tracy.
I'm just kidding. I didn't do that. I wouldn't. No, I actually, what I did, no, when it was, because as the day wore on and it got late, no, she asked me for some sleep because she's like, I got to get some sleep. And she was miserable. Once she got past to the point where she wasn't throwing up anymore because I wasn't about to give her sleeping pills because she would, I didn't want to, you know, choke on her own vomit. But once she got to that point, when you get to that point where you can't throw up anything else, when there's just nothing else left in your body to throw up, because she seriously woke up at like 11 o'clock or so, midnight or whatever, Friday night, Saturday morning. I mean, seriously. Thank God that I have a cast iron stomach, because what came out of her, and I'm like, oh my God, how could something, all this come out of somebody so little? I just like, really? Really? And she was so pitiful, but she gets so whiny. And I'm like, when she gets this way, I'm like, I had brain surgery. And I wasn't this neat. Why woman? Cause, you know, have you, when you were in school, when you went to law school, were you married or were you single?
Oh, I was single. Very single.
You know, nothing worse. There is nothing worse than going back to school when you're married, because your spouse, and I'm pretty sure there's members of the Horn family that have gone through this or are currently going through this. When your spouse realizes that it's the very important, like me, currently driving a cab, cannot do this for the rest of my life. You know, driving cab is not going to be around for the next, you know, I think I give cab driving maybe 5 more years before it's gone, before it's no longer a viable way to make a living. And that's basically how much longer it'll be before I finish school. So, you know, a lot is riding on me finishing school. My wife realizes that I need to finish school and that, you know, it takes me a lot longer than most people to.
Yeah, but there's intellectual understanding and there's emotional understanding.
Exactly. And the emotional understanding, as much as she intellectually understands that I love her and that I spend and that, you know, that I really want to spend time with her. But when I have an 8-page paper due and I'm still doing research and it's due in 2 days, I got to do my paper. It is maddening sometimes when it's like, she's like, the only thing, you don't love me anymore because you're always doing homework. She goes from, but then if I stop doing my homework, but you need to do your homework. If I'm just like sitting around like that 5 minutes that I'm not doing anything, and that's usually like when I'm not actually paying attention to her, why aren't you doing your homework? Oh.
Oh. Oh. I know.
Yeah.
I know. Well, Tracy, I got it. I'm awfully glad to hear from you. I've got to hit it here because I've got a special long-distance dedication for Alex Jones, and I want to make sure
really?
We get it in. Absolutely, absolutely. And so, in answer to your original question, I think we decided that, you know, we're not going to be too rough on the first Mrs. Jones, because at least she came to her senses and realized and realized that he was on the way to. Poisoning the mind of their children, and had already started. So, That's at least where I am on the issue.
And you know what? And when you say it like that, because she's getting out.
But now, the new Mrs. Jones.
Now that bitch don't. She
honey, you married him smack dab in the middle of an Illuminati rant, and like Comet Ping Pong Pizza.
We can't give melanoma any. You know, we don't give her a pass either, or a pardon. You knew. First of all, you were cheating. You were cheating hoe. First of all, you knew what you were getting into when you married a son of a bitch. So
for all we know, she's a fan or something.
Right, and you co-signed with the Bertha bullshit. So I can't say, oh, she's a woman, and we should give her a pass because, you know, womanhood and all that. Nah, bitch, nah. You knew what you were getting into when you married the fool. So on that note, I'm gonna bounce so you can do the long distance dedication, and I can't wait to listen to that.
All right, sounds good, Tracy. You have yourself a good evening, dear. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you too. Bye bye.
Bye now. The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver, from somewhere out on the 15 and 9/16 in Southern California. It is 7 minutes past the hour. Yes, we've got a long distance dedication courtesy. I had already queued it up, but Frank out in Iowa sent me an email saying, you got to play this. So I got to play this. It's a long distance dedication going out to Alex Jones and the Illuminati and all his friends out there in Pizzagate alt-right land. And especially, well, you'll figure it out. And as I noted, Jeremy got us started this evening. We still got $170 to go in fundraising, but I just can't not do this. Sometimes you just gotta. It's for you, Alex.
Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. We meet every day at the same cafe, 6:30, and no one knows she'll be there. Holding hands, making all kinds of plans, while the jukebox plays my favorite song. Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. Well, it's time for us to believe in. It hurts so much inside. Now she'll go her way, and I'll go mine. Tomorrow we'll meet the same place, the same time. Mrs. Jones, own. We gotta be extra careful. We can't afford to build our hopes up too high. I wanna meet and talk with you at the same place, the same cafe, the same time. And we're gonna hold hands like we used to. We're gonna talk it over, talk it over. We know, they know.
Performing live on Soul Train, Billy Paul and me and Mrs. Jones. A long-distance dedication going out to Alex, who will hopefully be paying huge, huge sums of child support and alimony in the very near future. Jesus, I didn't realize you couldn't go into the comment section of YouTube anymore either. My media player wasn't working. And so I defaulted to YouTube. And I'm just scrolling down, people telling me, I love this song, you know, so elegant, classic, beautiful voice. Doesn't take long before I... Oh! 5 months ago, nobody sings love songs like black people. Thank you, Alma, for taking us down to 160. Very, many thanks indeed. That is a tremendous help as we go through the evening. Thank you, Alma. Alma said, I knew you were educated, but didn't know in what. Thanks for mentioning you went to law school. I'd like to know what other specialties you studied. Your knowledge and recall's the best. Thanks for what you're doing. There's the law school thing. There was the cup of coffee I had trying to decide if I wanted to be a great Shakespearean actor. Didn't take me too terribly long to figure out that was not going to happen at the University of Alabama. I did some, studied anthropology, archaeology, the classics. For me, going to college was like being a kid in a candy store with a pocket full of, change. What you need to do is you need to, and then you can graduate on time. I haven't taken the early Neolithic novel yet. I had this crazy notion that I was in college to just learn as much as I could possibly, and then all the stuff they wanted me to take was stuff I didn't want to take. So, a little of this, a little of that. I mean, liberal arts, God love them. Arnold said, I would have bet $50 you were going to play this song. Asa, meanwhile, a dissenting voice says, if you play this on the air, you don't get to call Bob Seger's Turn the Page all those names. Oh, yes, I do. On a long and lonely road, east of Busted Knuckle, we were counting out the receipts that night, but somehow I wasn't happy with all that money. Nope, sorry. Mainly it's the fact that it's been... My real objection to Turn the Page, Asa, is the fact that there was a time in what was then rock and roll radio when you couldn't turn the dial without hearing Turn the Page, especially in the Midwest. Oh, dude, Jesus, Dill Harris. It was unavoidable. And there were a couple of other ones, but that one, yeah. Oy. Yeah, so that's what that is. okay, hey, let's run over to the phones, and let's all increase our IQs. I think we've got Snork on the line. Hey, Snork!
Hello.
How's it going?
Oh, fine. I say, a while back, you were talking about the oil spill up in Alaska.
Yes.
And during the BP oil spill, right after they kind of declared it was hopeless, Obama put out a call for engineers to volunteer to help if they had water experience, oil separation experience, or any kind of expertise that might help them deal with the oil that was in the Gulf. And a lot of scientists, engineers, and other specialists volunteered. And I was one of, I think, 1,600 teams that volunteered. And I was put on a team of six. And we had a wildlife biologist, an electrical engineer, a chemist, various people on our team. And we came up with a method to we were able to submit more than one solution. And our electrical engineer got together with the chemist and came up with a way to identify where the clouds of oil were in the water so that we could guide something down to collect the oil while it was down there instead of letting it float around. And another collaboration worked on, okay, once you know where the oil is, how do we get it? We also had that deploy from a little thing that had places on it for wildlife to land and dispersion paddles on it that allowed sea mammals to come up for air. And we were just going to float these out and it'd be self-powered, constantly out looking for the oil, because we thought it would take a long time to go, but it would collect the oil for separation later. And then we wanted to onshore. We actually had a construction guy with us as well. And he had a lot of unemployed people in the area, and we came up with a plan to build processing plants using byproducts from orange juice production, that part that they have to dispose of, and to separate out the oil from the water, because seawater needs to be returned as seawater, not purified and returned without the salt. It's got nutrients and things, and it needed to go back in the ocean. We needed to take the bad stuff out. So we found the chemical that we could, that had a different boiling point than water and the oil, where we could put this in and use it to remove the oil from the water and then heat it up and recover the chemical that we used to clean the next batch of sand or water from the ocean. And we thought we had some really good solutions, and a lot of the other people had really good solutions. And after 2 months, Obama turned over administration of these teams to BP. So they're the oil people. They'll best be able to analyze which ones could go. All of our solutions removed the oil from either the ocean or the beaches and allowed them to be collected, which would have mandated like a $50,000 fine per barrel that we removed. And anybody that had a solution that could quantify the oil was disqualified from participating. You know, there are solutions out there. And of course, one of the rights that in exchange for their hard work of coming over and taking over these teams, then these technologies that we developed for that became sequestered and unmarketable. So, you know, we can't even try to sell them elsewhere.
Jesus. Let me turn the discussion, if I may, Snork, toward what's going on now. Yes. I can only assume, because you've got the expertise and I don't, so tell me when I'm wrong. I can only assume that working in semi-tropical waters of the Gulf of Mexico is a different creature from working in what at least used to be the frigid waters of the Arctic.
Yes.
There are different problem sets that attach to each.
Also, we're working with multiple gases, not just natural gas. And it's gases versus almost tar-like substance that we were looking at in the Gulf.
Right, and hence the tar balls on the beach and stuff. Well, so when you've got... okay, answer this question for me first. When you see the words underwater pipeline, Does that mean the pipeline just lays on the seabed, or have they somehow buried it?
It could be either. But burying it costs money, so that usually precludes it being used.
So they just let it lay around?
Yeah.
And eventually, I mean, things that lay on the seabed, doesn't the seabed eventually, the seabed environment, doesn't that have an effect on things that are laying there? I mean,
well, people throw things in the ocean.
I mean, we sink old aircraft carriers to let them form what we call man-made reefs.
Mm-hmm. Also,
barnacles and coral and things grow on them, and things, fish swim in, and little octopi find neat little niches in which to hide and do octopus things.
Yeah, when you have something that's probably flexible, and it has calcium and other things forming on it, that makes them hard and makes them kind of cemented to the surface that they're on. So they become somewhat buried. But in an area that's seismically challenged, if suddenly there's cracks and stresses, when that hardened area wants to move and there's a boundary where it wants to slip by, it's almost guaranteed to cause a leak at that point.
And so it is a safe thing to say, and it's not just something I say because I'm some sort of damn tree hugger. A pipeline, by its very nature, is going to leak.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, even
and you can say that about above ground or underwater, right? Or mm-hmm. underground.
Even with most pipelines that have gaskets, flanges, or oil seals, it's expected to slowly leak over time. And the smaller the gas is, the more likely it is to get by.
What about when you're dealing with liquids or, you know, oil?
Well, the oil will leak less, but that doesn't mean zero. And if you have a lot of a little bit, it can still be a lot.
By the way, you're getting a question. Ron in Raleigh says, as I remember, didn't Kevin Costner have some sort of gizmo he came up with during his filming of Waterworld? He said Snork might know.
It wasn't during a film. It was during this. He was one of the people that was in this project. His team was excellent. They had a fantastic means for putting a boom into a cloud. The guys on our team that were working on finding the cloud were wanting to work with him because, you know, they wanted to say, we can tell you where to drop your boom that it would be the, you know, you would get the most return on it. He had a good system. His was centrifugal, very simple, but simple doesn't mean bad. And he could basically fill a little tanker ship full of oil that he pulled out and dump the water that was okay over the side. They attacked him for dumping his water over the side, which was at a better quality level than the seawater he was fixing. But they expected it to be perfect on the other end. And if he pulled a shipload of recovered oil up to port, it would have bankrupted BP. Because, like I said, $50,000 a barrel. And, you know, of all of the methods, his had the most capability of quickly getting the most oil out. And his idea is probably responsible for the use of the most dispersant, because they were probably very worried that he was going to get somewhere with his method. And they wanted that dispersed so that he would not have a cloud to suck up.
Wow.
Like I said, if you bring in like a little tanker ship, that's not 10 barrels.
No. And with something, there's another one. This is, I mean, so in the story about the spray, it's just a spray and it's a spritz of crude oil in Alaska. They said, at present, we don't know how much oil was spilled, sprayed, you know, atomized, whatever. How is that determined anyway?
Well, that is a little bit more difficult, estimated at best. You can say I've got cloud volumes of this far. You can judge by the velocity of the plume that's coming out of it. For that to happen, they've had to have a camera down there and had to have some kind of reference. But that's not impossible. And there should be a body that's not paid by them that is already on site, that it is, you know, that they get no financial repercussions from turning them in, always monitoring them. And we don't have anything like that.
So, I mean, it's a guess. The oil company example. It just sprayed. I mean, we don't know how much spray.
They'll do anything they can to block somebody from getting an accurate count. Like I said, over 1,500 teams got turned away because they basically had methods that could, you know, prove that a certain amount of oil was collected, and they didn't have to prove the entire amount. You know, like each of us were looking at different parts of the recovery. You know, if I could find a million barrels and another guy could find 3 million barrels, that's 4 million barrels. It's suddenly a lot of money. And like I said, the centrifuge method was just so good. I mean, he got smeared for that. Everybody treated it like a joke. I think it was pretty much like the Hillary versus Bernie thing. Bernie was smeared, just like Bernie was smeared. Costner was smeared for his participation, poo-pooed by everybody that, you know, he was doing his Waterworld tricks. And the reality was, he really wasn't. He had a good one.
So, in other words, when we're told that umpty bajillion barrels got spilled, is it safe to say in almost any instance, Snork, that those are conservative estimates?
Yeah. In fact, if they overdid it, they would probably be facing some sort of lawsuit. These people go after you.
Wow. Yeah. So obviously there's a difference between oil and gas.
Well, the gas is actually easier to detect in water and quantify.
Okay, but the thing is, out of the Alaska story, we've got gas spraying out of the above ground wellhead, and we've got gas escaping from the underwater pipeline.
Yeah,
we addressed the underwater pipeline. Now, how about the stuff that's escaping into the atmosphere?
That can be tested by even a walk and probably a helicopter sampling of the air at different distances away from it. Then you build up a what's called a point cloud map of the cloud. And it can say, well, I've got the cloud at this point and these differences. You throw the number into a computer and it'll come back with probably a fairly accurate estimate of what you have for gas volume discharged.
And it just goes up there.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I mean, I'm not trying to be overly simplistic, Snork.
That is simple. It's that simple.
And it just goes up there with the CO2, and it's 86 times as heat trapping as CO2 is. And we're just screwed. I mean, is that what we're...
I'd say at minimum, make life more difficult. Just one more thing we need to clean up.
But I mean, can you? That's the thing. Can you clean it up out of the atmosphere?
Not easily. It needs to be chemically broken down. ultraviolet light and things like that.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Is this going to involve aircraft? Because it's going to drive Alex Jones fucking crazy.
Chemtrails, goddammit. Illuminati chemtrails.
We're kind of not able to supply what we need to use chemtrails to go against natural gas. Basically, only thing that's going to heal it is time. And we need to fight the gases that we can fight and not keep liberating.
Well, see, I have this theory, Snork. I think if we could build a machine that would micro-miniaturize Republicans down to, like, nano-size, and we could attach them to a boom or something, or shoot them into the sky, that they're such hydrocarbon-crazed, grubbing little freaks that they would gather all the molecules in and bring it back and probably sell it on the New York Mercantile Exchange.
Yeah, NH3 is a gas that I really don't know how to take care of as well. Stuff like carbon dust from diesel cars and things like that, those are easy, and radiation is great for getting rid of that, but there's just not a whole lot of things to do for the hydrocarbons. And we just need to be more careful with it. And the way it is now, we're at least 3 years, if not 8 or 12, from getting somebody in Congress and in the White House that actually wants to do something about the hydrocarbons. Organic molecules are not easy to get rid of.
No, because Earth.
Yeah.
I mean, that may sound overly simplistic, Snork, but...
Yeah, soot and the contaminants like that, I've never seen anything work better than alpha radiation. It charges it up, and it goes and finds a place to cling to, and it takes it right out of the air. But try mentioning using nuclear power for something that's good.
Well, yeah, and I left one story out along the way, but it fits in our conversation here, Snork. Joe Rahm, who seems, I've been reading him for years, and the guy's damned intelligent. He's the climate editor for Climate Progress. And according to Russian scientists, who have not yet been murdered by Vladimir Putin, who says climate change is just something we'll have to deal with and it may not be a big deal, it may not be a big deal after all. They have documented 7,000 underground methane bubbles in Siberia, which Joe Rahm reports could explode any time.
Yeah, they've had one burning for quite a while. I forgot what they call it. I think it's like the gateway to hell or something, where people actually go there for tourism. There's great big, looks like a meteor hit it, and it's just burning always.
His post over at Think Progress. It accompanied a video and it shows a guy, he's apparently a hunter in Siberia or whatever, and he walks up on this piece of tundra, although it's green and lush and everything, a vast flat space in Siberia, and it is lit, it's like a blister. And it just bounces when he puts his foot on it. Kabloom, kabloom, kabloom. And this is, of course, all stuff that was locked in before the Arctic melted.
Well, you're back to your archaeology and geology. This is not a solid, fixed-state planet. We're on a crust that's moving on top of a molten, unstable, moving mass. There's all kinds of little pockets of things that we don't know about that could pop out any time. And what we should, we do need to do is when we know something's out there, we do need to be taking care of it, and we're not. And maybe the tact for it is to correct why, how we're going about it. Instead of saying we're spending too much on war, saying we need to have a war on climate change. Boeing, Lockheed Martin, we need your help. could you make equipment instead of making for war? Could you start making equipment for us to have readiness to deal with the storms that are going to be hitting us? Could you make us equipment for rapid response to get out to the ocean and start cleaning up some of the areas that could be converted from being a plastic wasteland in the middle of the ocean to being a huge oxygen generating engine? And if we did that, putting extra oxygen in the atmosphere would counter the CO2 and the natural gas. You know, if we took a 200 billion is the right amount. if we told Lockheed Martin, we'll give you $200 billion a year to help us start working on. I would bet that suddenly the three major defense contractors would all start saying, we can only buy so many bombs, but we really need to make a lot of this stuff. And I bet that they would be willing suddenly to say that you guarantee us 30 years of climate change equipment in exchange for the weapons, we'll support climate change. And I really bet they would. Right now, they have to fight and try to prove everything. If they were just guaranteed, hey, we want you to do climate research for us, I bet we would have all the climate research you can imagine. I bet in 15 years, we would see planes powered by methods that we find not bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to get back to the climate issue, what Joe Rahm says is that, you know, given the fact that methane is much more climate deleterious than even CO2, he says we can expect to see more extra warming than the scientific models even project, which in turn defrosts more permafrost than we thought. What it seems like he's getting at there is that as bad as these models look, Snork, it can and likely will be worse.
Yeah, not only that, but our advances of study of atoms and molecules is getting so much better that we've discovered another phase of water between 30 and 40 degrees. And every time there's a phase change, there's this extra energy storage going on. So as we bring the temperature, the average temperature of the seawater up, we're suddenly finding that there is going to be a change in the amount of energy that's stored in the ocean being released. Those two working together actually could accelerate quite a bit. And that's part of why Gore was talking about a hockey stick.
The hockey stick is a scientifically derived graph.
And it came out how long ago? We're getting a lot closer to that crick of the hockey stick than we ever have been.
I don't understand nearly as much as I should because, as Republicans are famous for saying, I'm not a scientist. But isn't there a point of no return?
Not until we're dead. I mean, maybe it's getting more likely or less likely.
But that until we're dead part is predicated on the ability of the planet to support human life, Snork.
Which is decreasing. You know, there's no way that we even have possibly enough air to breathe for the number of people we're predicting to have in 50 years. In 10 years, we're already looking at predictions where somehow we need to lose 3 billion people to survive in 10 years. And sometimes I think that's why we're doing all these silly wars.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, if you go back to where the program began with, you know, Jeff Flake, and I had a note from Sylvia who said she looked up the quote. It wasn't as, she said, I checked it out on Snopes. It wasn't as extreme and stupid as it seemed at first blush. But I noticed the language that Sylvia uses as extreme and stupid. If I understand Sylvia correctly, it is still, to some degree, extreme and stupid. You know, the fact of the matter is, Sparky just sent me a link to a molten salt energy storage furnace, you know, with a solar power plant. And it goes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365.
Yeah, those are good.
And Jeff Flake says you can't have light solar energy power at night. Amazing. It's just, it's stunning. Because as long as he's out there saying this kind of crazy crap, Snork, that means that there are people who, well, I guess we can't have no solar. Yeah, well, utterly oblivious to the massive amounts of data that come from places like Germany that are on the same latitude as goddamned Alaska. And a numbnuts bought off by the oil industry in Arizona is convincing other numbnuts that solar energy doesn't work where the sun always shines.
Yeah, and yeah, Germany even has one town that was always in the shade. They put mirrors on a mountain and give them some light and make solar power with. It's just fantastic. It just completely changed the town. Everybody's happy there now. Also, there's more than one method other than salt. I love the salt method for states like Nevada, Arizona, California. Not using the salt method in those states is ecologically irresponsible. Up here where it's north, we have some other ways. And up here, when you put in solar, you need to put in adequate solar and storage so that 3 days out of seven are all you need for your power. Is that we have that bad of sunlight up here and that amount of clouds. So, you know, even we can do it at this latitude. It just means more planning. There's also ways of different materials let heat move at different speeds than other materials. It's like if you pick up aluminum, you burn yourself right away if it's on a fire. But you can pick up other materials and it still feels cold. And if you left it connected to the heat for a day or two, that heat would eventually get there. And you can use that method also to heat something up during the day and let the heat slowly transfer and get to the other side and then it pull your energy off at that point. That's called troming. And that was invented millennia ago by our Southwest American Indians who learned to build houses in
canyon crevices.
Right. So that during the one part of the day, it would heat up and then it would provide them warmth all night. So they use their solar power at night. And it was the only need they had it for was making heat.
And yet you can't explain that to Republican voters.
Right.
Because they are rendered deaf by, what, the siren song of the oil industry?
Even the Amish people here use solar power. They might not use it with solar panels in the way we think about it, but they definitely use solar power and wind.
Sure they do. Oh, God almighty, the first vertical-bladed wind turbines were invented by the Persians? and served as pumps.
Yeah.
Anybody, you talk about the Amish, you know, they don't just build a damn house. They site it very carefully, and they maximize the exposure to the sun, southern exposures, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, just using the sun wisely is solar power.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Bob, I've got to go.
All right. I'll see you. I'll see you, Snort. You take care.
All right, bye.
Thanks for smartening us up. And he does. Snork always does. And I'm grateful for that. Dear God, a picture coming from Jack in Shreveport. The Darvaza gas crater. You can look it up on Wikipedia. It's a little terrifying. Otherwise known as the Door to Hell or the Gates of Hell, working with the first bumper that we played. Yes. It's in Turkmenistan. It's a natural gas field that collapsed into an underground cavern and became a natural gas crater, which they then set on fire to prevent the spread of the methane gas. It's been burning continuously since 1971. Charming. Now, just for the sake of clarity or... and a note coming from Alma, subject line, the planet. This entire planet is a living organism. Why do humans think they are the only vital species other than animals they have dominion over? For me, Alma, it's a separation from nature. It's the idea that humanity is separate and apart from nature, that humanity can overcome nature as opposed to living with it. And it may prove our doom as a species. And when we leave great heaps of garbage and filth in our wake, a couple of million years from now, the 6 foot tall sentient cockroaches will stand with four of their arms waving about, and their little wings fluttering back and forth, and they will raise up statues to us and revere us as their creator God. Yeah. And so we got $160 to raise this evening. We'll be at $360 tomorrow. It would be nice to be at only $200 tomorrow, but if we can't, we can't. It happens. 10 at 16, 16 at 10, 1 at 160, 2 at 80, 4 at 40, 8 at 20, 16 at 10. We did that. 32 at 5. 64 at 2 and a half. 128 at a buck and a quarter. Let's have 128 people subscribe at a buck and a quarter. No, don't do that. But I want to go back to this business with Alex Jones for a minute, because it provides an opportunity to get a window into, and I've talked about this some in other contexts, it's a window into what's going on in political media. And I do think about these things. I think Agnes would tell you, as would a few others, when the mic's on, I'm pretty much the same guy as when the mic's off. I don't have to talk about wanting to, I don't have to call people fairies and tell them to fill their hands because I need to create some butch image. I talk about things that matter to me. And that, by extension, you have taught me over the years matter to you. The future of the species. The future of other life on this planet. The seemingly eternal curse of ignorance that bedevils societies, cultures, and countries to one degree or another, and in various time frames. Take an example. I read an article today about the coming Supreme Court argument that Neil Gorsuch, Ann's boy, will hear. It'll be among his first cases that he hears as a Supreme Court justice. It's that Missouri Lutheran case. You know, the one where the church wants the state to give them money to reimburse them for safety-fying the playground, despite the fact that there's a provision in the Missouri Constitution and in the constitutions of several different states saying monies from the state coffers cannot in any wise be used or provided to or paid out to any religious institution. Here's a hint on those things. Again, I'll rely on the open source fact-checking department of the Horn, but I'm guessing that clauses or proscriptions like that do not have a vintage more recent than 1900. Okay, if there's a clause in the Arizona Constitution, if there's a similar clause in the Arizona Constitution, okay, 1912. All right, if there's one in Hawaii's, Alaska's, okay. But in the case of Missouri, while we while we wish things were otherwise, we know that this country was founded by people who were mostly deists and non-believers of various stripes. At least the ones we really revere as being geniuses. We're deists, non-believers. But then the country went through an upheaval and became deeply, deeply, deeply religious. It was called the Great Awakening, when in fact it was the Great Deluding. And yet most of these states that have these provisions were also admitted to statehood at similar times. And so the men, and yes, it was men, sorry, the men who wrote these constitutions and inserted these clauses about not giving state monies to religious institutions were far more pious than the people we have now. And yet these unpious people whose only goal is to get government money for religious institutions so as to more likely enforce their will on perhaps a country that doesn't even want it, well, odds are Missouri's constitutional clause may be stricken down so that a Lutheran church can get playground rubberizing money. But that will open a yawning door into hell for taxpayer funding of Jesus freak schools, among other things. And don't you doubt for a minute that every daggum religious school in any given state is going to have their hand out saying, "Gimme." Because that's what religious institutions do. And those will constitute the establishment of various religions throughout the states. Well, I mean, okay, we gave some to a Buddhist temple too. Doesn't matter. And so that's the backdrop to this upcoming case. Now, here's where it gets weird. I didn't know until this morning when I read it. I didn't know that this case was accepted for certiorari, was granted in this case, back before fat Tony Scalia became fat dead Tony Scalia. The court accepted cert on this over a year ago, a year and months ago. And in the interim, after Fat Dead Tony became Fat Dead Tony, they have deliberately held off on scheduling oral arguments on this case until, hopefully, a right-wing justice could be installed on the court. How do I know this? Because Mitch McConnell was not going to let let Merrick Garland on, and said that if Hillary Clinton had been elected president, she would not be allowed to appoint a single Supreme Court justice. So old Balls and Strikes Roberts, with a pretty good idea of how it was going to play out, deliberately waited to schedule this case for oral arguments until he knew he would have a ninth member on the Supreme Court, and had it, and knew pretty damned well that ninth member was going to be on his ultra far right fascist side of the court, so that the gates could be opened to allow public monies to flow into churches. This matters to us. And I don't have to be anybody. I don't have to be anybody but me to talk about that. I can talk about that the same way off the air as I can on. And that's what happens here. But if you're working the right-wing side of the street, you got to amp it up. You got to keep the monkeys in a poo-flinging frenzy. And therein lies all the difference. You see? So there we are. That's the end of Moran Monday. Back for Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. Cross your fingers. And an anonymous friend of the program just took us down to $120 to go. Thank you, A. Nani Moose. Thank you very kindly. Have a great evening, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.